Hi, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive insights on how we can live a longer, healthier, and hopefully happier life. To have meaning and purpose each day, where you get up out of bed and you just feel good that you have another day to be alive, to explore what you haven't, to open your mind to where you've been closed, to challenge presumptions that you had taken for granted. Deconstructing what shouldn't be there is how we then reconstruct what should. And that's the most difficult thing of all, to surrender, and that is knowledge. And yet we assume that the more knowledge we have, the better we're able to deal with the issues of life. Well, what if some of that knowledge comes from other people's biases, wrong information, the wrong history? Then you're going to grow up believing completely in something that is not what it should be. And therefore, try to take some time, maybe an hour, a day, just to go through some of your beliefs and ask, how do I know that these are the right beliefs, the right rituals to live through each day? And one day we wake up and think, wow, why did I believe that? Why did I do that? Something very simple. The people believe that, well, they want a fast food meal. Fast food means from the time they order it to the time they get it and consume it should take no longer than about 12 minutes. Where when you go into fine dining, you might take 20 minutes before you start your meal. Now, if you're making food at home, as many of you probably do, probably the majority of you, then you know from the time you go out and buy the food and then prepare it and then serve it and clean up afterwards, it can be over an hour. So it's a ritual. And so people think, well, I don't want to take the time, even if that food's healthier for me. I want something when I'm hungry. And so one day they end up eating so much of this food because it's a ritual, it's a routine. I'm hungry, I want something in my stomach, the fast food. I don't have a lot of money. I can't go to the farmer's market, it's too expensive. Can't go to the gourmet stores, can't buy a radicchio. Radicchio is too expensive, it's twice the price of the organic greens, but I'm not even buying the organic greens. I'm buying iceberg lettuce that has no nutritional value because that's what I ate growing up. You see, we have to stop at some point. Inhale and exhale slowly and say, okay, I'm going to open up and take a look at this scrapbook of life. And there are going to be pictures that I didn't think twice about taking. That now when I look, well, maybe I shouldn't have been doing that, shouldn't eating that, shouldn't drinking that, shouldn't have said no to that opportunity and yes to that one. That's what I mean about just try to see if there's things in your life you can let go of so you can embrace something that's more essential to your well-being. That said, what's one of the foods we don't eat a lot of in the United States? Broccoli. And a lot of people say, well, see, if George Bush Sr., and he's the president of the United States, and he's a rich person, if he doesn't eat broccoli, well, you know, it's okay for me not to eat broccoli. No, he was just foolish. Penn State University has just come out with a study showing that broccoli consumption protects your gut lining, reduces disease. This was in a laboratory study with mice. And they said the broccoli, which we know has got all the cruciferous nutrients, by the way, broccoli, also asparagus, Brussels sprouts, collard greens, kale, mustard greens, these are all terrific for you because they contain chemicals, and these chemicals can help block the formation of cancer or destroy cancer if you have it. So broccoli is known for being good for our health. And we just don't eat it, and that's unfortunate. Nor do we eat most of the other cruciferous vegetables. But here it can help prevent type 2 diabetes. In a recent study at Penn State University, they found that broccoli contained certain molecules that bind to a receptor within mice and help to protect the lining of the small intestine, thereby inhibiting the development of disease. These findings lend support to the idea that broccoli is a superfood. It sure is. And you should be having it on a daily basis. And by the way, there's science behind it. prestigious institution, and it can help all the people who are pre-diabetic or diabetic. Also, besides that, it also helps with the people who want to lose weight for health reasons and also to prevent cancer. Now, there's another study from the University of Minnesota and Bastyr University, and it's about turkey tail. No, turkey tail is not the tail of a turkey. It's a mushroom, turkey tail. What's it do that's so unique? It boosts your immunity, especially in women with breast cancer. So if you have breast cancer, it can boost your immunity so significantly that it may even shrink breast cancer tumors. A 7-year clinical study funded by the National Institutes of Health and conducted at University of Minnesota and Bastyr University showed that what is called Trematis verrucola, or turkey tail mushroom, in freeze-dried form, dramatically boosted the function of women with stage 3 breast cancer, possibly shrinking tumors. So, by the way, all the other mushrooms are good for you as well. So just have mushrooms, 1 serving per day. And also it helps improve pulmonary disease. It helps eliminate urinary tract infections. It's relief for digestive tract irritations. And it's a general remedy for lack of energy and malaise. Now, you know that I'm a major advocate of exercising. And the older you get, the more important it becomes. But a new study from Guangzhou Medical University in China says exercise can wipe out the damage of poor sleep and help you live longer. Now, there are times in life where we all just don't get enough sleep. I'm right at the top of that list. There was a time in my life, I'm not going to go into it now, but at some point, I'll give you an idea of what I did in 48 hours. And why would that be important? Because of how much energy, time, and lack of sleep I had, because I was giving so much energy to things, and by my perspective today, I would have portioned out, done over a longer period of time. But hey, I had the energy and I had the imagination, so I was doing all this different stuff, including working as a senior research fellow at the Institute of Biology, and frequently I did that at night. So after going through a whole day at the Tri-State Healing Center, counseling all the patients, creating the protocols from the medical staff, then going over to the Anti-Aging Center in early evening. Remember that over on 92nd Street? That's where we did our menopausal study, arthritis study, high blood pressure study, did 3 different fundraising premiums for PBS stations, built a whole studio there with people answering phones, and then brought in the 2 best fundraiser for PBS so that I didn't have to go around the country. I could just do it right there. Hundreds and hundreds of lectures done there. But what people didn't realize is that after I do a lecture there, let's say from 6 to 7:30, and another from, let's say, 8 o'clock until 9:30, then I go out after that, have some dinner, maybe go to a movie with some friends, and then when everyone else was going home at midnight, I'd go over with Marty Feldman to the Institute of Applied Biology, and I'd be the only one in the building, and go up to the 3rd floor and do some research. 2 to 3 hours, I had a couch there, take a little nap, get up and back off and to the west side and start my day. Sometimes getting way too little sleep. But because I was so healthy, I was able to get away with it to a degree. It also depletes your chi. And that's what you don't want depleted. In fact, you want to energize your chi. I'm going to do a whole classroom on the air on chi on an upcoming program. And you can go to Gary and All YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey and download the free classrooms on the air. In any case, I got everything in a day, and there were a lot more than that. I also had to go to my uptown health food store, make sure everything was good, go to my main office, 83rd and Broadway, and then produce, write, and direct documentaries, and then shoot out to a location, shoot back. And then that got me up to about 3 o'clock, and then I would do my radio show at noon, and then I would go down to the Tri-State Healing Center. Yeah, busy times. In any case, but it's a transition, meaning you go through a period of life and suddenly your priorities are what they are. And then you go through another transition of life and your priorities can be completely different. And so I just try to ask myself to learn my own lessons. What would I do differently with the mindset and knowledge I have now versus what I did back then? Is it possible to do too much in a day? The answer is yes. Is it possible to think you're doing all the right things when you're spending too much time on everything else and not enough on yourself? The answer is yes, too. So you have to strike a balance, and that in is the key. That's one of the reasons I'm living now down here in Florida full-time. When I was thrown out of my apartment, yes, I was thrown out, not because I didn't pay the rent for 20 years, I did, and was a good neighbor to all my neighbors on my floor who would knock on my door nonstop asking questions, but because the landlord wanted to sell the apartment and I only rented. But I decided instead of renting another apartment in New York was not the place for me at this time. And I don't believe it's going to be the place for many people in the near future. And that's why you look at the places that are safe to live and are non-threatening and give you the freedom to make the choices you need to make in life. That's why I'm here in Florida. Wonderful state, great people. Never have an argument. People have discussions, have different opinion, but yeah, it's a different way of communicating. But the sun, the weather, exercising, being outside, planting and smelling the roses, you got to make time for that, and not just when you're old and retiring. So anyhow, I'll be dealing with that on an upcoming class on the air, how to put balance into your life to get everything done without overdoing it. But getting that sleep, that's important, and we don't. College students don't. When we're young and we're out dancing and going to Studio 54 and you get home at 3 in the morning, you're not getting a good night's sleep. And you won't know it then, but later in life you will, because that can actually shorten your life substantially. I'm talking about substantially. So, good news, and this is really good news, because this study shows that even when you're sleeping too little or too much, it can cut years off your life. However, the new study shows that exercise can counteract the negative effects of poor sleep and even help people live longer. So, wow, that's great. So the more exercise you do, the longer you're going to live. And not only that, you can undo much of the damage from not having enough of the melatonin secreted by the pineal gland, which happens when you're going into a deep sleep. And when you wake up, you stop that. When there's light in a room, that stops. When there's electromagnetic pulses, that is diminished. So we can undo a lot. And the study showed that increased physical activity levels weakened the death risks associated with short or long-term sleep duration. And this was done at the Affiliated Brain Hospital at the Medical University in China. So, and they studied 92,000 adults between the ages of 40 and 73 to show this. Good for them. All right, and next up, another, and mind you, I'm only using peer-reviewed literature in all this that I share with you. There's a hormone, and when you're stressed, for real or imaginary causes, it increases, and that's not good. It's good if you are playing sports and you need your cortisol to have that burst of energy. Yeah, but that's short term, and your body can recover. But long-term chronic stress is deadly. Here's the latest from the University of Gothenburg, which is in Sweden. Cortisol, C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L, hits natural DNA processes in mental health very hard. What do I mean? High concentrations of stress hormone, cortisol, in the body affect important DNA processes and increase the risk of long-term psychological consequences. These relationships are evident in a study from the Academy on Patients with Cushing's Syndrome. but the findings also open the door for new and treatment strategies for other stress-related conditions like anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress. The uncommon disease Cushing's, C-U-S-H-I-N-G-S, syndrome involves a substantial overproduction of cortisol resulting from a benign tumor of the pituitary adrenal glands. The condition is characterized by a lot of excess weight and fat deposits in the face and neck, high blood pressure, and diabetes. And to an extent, the affected individual also suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, anxiety, depression, and cognitive impairment. So it really hits you physically, but it also hits you psychologically as well. And so this is the way that they work with it. And they found out that the stress load is, that you're having with this disease is also similar to the stress load when you're just anxious, when you can't control the outcome of something, or you imagine you can't. So you start to over-emote and you become highly stressed. You get what I call overwhelmed. You know what I mean. People that just seem really tight, can't relax, don't have spontaneous humor, can't see the lightness in all things. They look at everything as if it's heavy and dark and personalized to them. Well, that is a person that really needs some humanistic, holistic, psychological guidance. There's plenty of people to help. If they know these people, tapping, Dr. Henry Grayson does that better than anyone else I know in the United States. Rebirthing also works. And softer techniques of understanding why we do things. So therefore, focusing upon the why we do them, how we manifest it, so we can put our energy in something its opposite. From Natural Blaze, never waste food again with this unique storage method. Avoid wasting food by storing your produce in sand to ensure longer shelf life. Yeah. Using sand to preserve food is a very effective old method that has been forgotten by many. The sand method can be used in a few different ways to extend shelf life of root vegetables and certain firm flesh fruit. If you have a refrigerator that has those large crisper drawers at the bottom, the best way to approach the sand storing method is to get some play sand, or what's called sugar sand, from the hardware store, and fill one of those drawers with a few inches of sand. A nettle root, vegetables like beets, turnips, rutabagas, or firm flesh fruits like apples and Bartlett pears into the sand. Cover them until they are completely submerged in sand and wash your produce and it'll, you know, before you do that, and it stays fresh for months. You heard me. Yeah, something nobody's probably going to do, but I just wanted to share it with you because I just thought it was kind of neat. You know, people historically, the Bushmen of the Kalahari will take an ostrich shell and they will make a little hole in it and they will fill it with water and then they bury it about 5 feet down with a stick coming up. So others, talk about selflessness, talk about a real spiritual value. They will find these and know that someone, a caring human being they probably will never meet, gave them water in a desert. They also, when they come to fruit trees, then will pick all the fruit because they want to know that someone behind them, another group, will find that and have food to eat. What a wonderful way to care about other people in a society. So if you have a cool basement or pantry or cold cellar, you can store your produce just as easily in boxes with sand. If you're trying to store gangly roots like carrots and parsnips, immerse them vertically in the sand. Ginger and cauliflower can also be preserved this way, although they won't last as long as the root vegetables. And you can keep them in a refrigerator, or you can do this. Just try it. Take one drawer and try it. Carrot fronds, the beet greens must be completely cut back or they'll rot at the roots. So you don't want that. So cut the floral. California Davis, high blood pressure in your 30s is associated with worse brain health in your 70s. Having high blood pressure in your 30s is associated with premature death, according to the University of California, Davis. The research published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Network Open, compared magnetic resonance imaging, the MRIs, brain scans of older adults who had high blood pressure between the ages of 30 and 40, with older adults who had normal blood pressure. The researchers found that high blood pressure had significantly lowered regions of the brain's volume, and worse, white matter integrity, both factors associated with dementia. And our final study today comes at a time when we really should pay attention, because a lot of people, a lot of millennials in their 30s and people a little older in their 40s, they're suffering a lot of stress. And when we get stressed, we generally don't make right choices. We frequently make wrong choices. A lot of people start drinking a lot of alcohol. A lot of people eat a lot of food, including a lot of unhealthy food. I never see someone saying, I'm so stressed, I've got to have beet leaf green and sprout salad. No, they're going to eat not just a piece of pizza, they're going to eat the whole pizza. They're going to be having a lot of sodium in their diet. We way have too much sodium as it is right now. So this University of California, Davis study shows that if you're in your 30s and 40s, and you have high blood pressure, that's not good. In an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Network Open, they did some MRIs at people who had high blood pressure in their 30s and 40s, and then people who were older who had normal blood pressure, and the researchers found that high blood pressure when you're in 30s, 40s means you're more likely to have a worse white matter outcome in your brain, which is associated with dementia. It's also associated with increased risk of stroke and heart attacks. So, try to deal with getting the sodium out of the diet. Have vegetables, you can use celery seed extract, can bring down beet juice, can bring down your blood pressure. Exercise can also help, but stress really keeps it up. So try to take a B-complex, 50 milligrams, with extra B12, 1 milligram methylated B12, 1 milligram methylated folic acid, and that will help tremendously. And so we don't want you having a tough time now, only to face a tougher time staying alive and having cognition 20 or 30 years from now. That's it for today on Health and Healing, but you can go every day, any time of the day, 24/7, and you can go to Odyssey and look under Gary Noll, and you'll see our classroom on the air and articles and documentaries. You can also go to Gary Noll YouTube and get our classroom on the air and things on health and healing. All right, and Rumble, also Gary Noll Film Library. You can download all the stuff we do every day. We're going to take a break and come right back. We have a lot to share. Please stay with us. I have a quote using in a new documentary. I'd like to see if you remember who made this statement. Quote, "The FDA protects the big drug companies and is subsequently rewarded, and using the government's police powers, they attack those who threaten the big drug companies. The thing that bugs me is that people think that the FDA is protecting them. It isn't. What the FDA is doing and what the public thinks it's doing are as different as night and day." End quote. Know who said that? Let's see. Give us a call. 888-874-4888. But also, we wrapped up our final rough cut last night. A rough cut is before we put in music and color correct and sound correct. But the documentary is finished. And here's a quote from it. Who said this? Someone that if you're literate, you'd like reading, you'll know this person. "Tolerance will reach such a level that intelligent people will be banned from thinking so as not to offend the imbeciles." Boy, is that true today. Tolerance will reach such a level that intelligent people will be banned from thinking as not to offend the imbeciles. Two quotes. I'd like you to give us a call if you know who said those. Also, I'm just going to bring up real quick on a few things. And then I'm going to read just a brief note from someone who listened to the program. He's well known. His name is Leonard Bracken. Nice guy. And he asked this question. Hi, Gary. I guess you saw the article about yet another transgender terrorist. There was the shooting in the Tennessee school, and now we find out there was one planned in Colorado. Okay. There's a whole lot of questions he asks, but here's what I would say on this, and this is why you haven't heard me say anything. I'm going to say it all tomorrow evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour. The entire hour is set aside with one of the world's leading scholars, and we're going to talk about how woke, the whole phenomena, has weaponized language to be used against those who will not submit to their change. But Leonard, it wasn't that, and again, think carefully what I'm saying. We shouldn't say that a transgender terrorist shot and killed 6 people, 3 children, because then you're suddenly going to see yourself in a conflict about transgenderism instead of what it is about. Someone with a mental illness decided to hurt people. And what do all the people been hurting people in these mass shootings, at least 90% of them, have in common? It wasn't their gender. That's irrelevant. It was the medications they were on. So what medications, if any, was this person on? Why is that never asked? Because since Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore's film that got a lot of popularity, was very successful, one of the most successful documentaries ever made up to that point, everyone said it was the guns. Okay, here's one of those ironies. It just so happens that I was in Colorado with my production team, film team, and we filmed about 39 different people, including Eric Harris's classmates, the parents, and they had a completely different story. They said it was not the guns that it was the drugs they were on. They were normal until they started taking Effexor and Prozac in very high doses. And one of them even mentioned that he was okay until they upped his dosage, and then he just went nuts. Well, we have many situations like that. In that same trip, went over to Utah, and there was a normal family and nothing unusual about them. They were Mormons, but that's secondary. They had normal lives until one day when the teenage son woke up and he was in jail. And he'd gone into school that day with a rifle and was going to shoot the students. He didn't remember any of that. Well, how did that happen? Well, it happened because he was in a relationship, and like a lot of teenagers, it breaks up and they get very sad about it. And instead of simply dealing with, this is just one of many transitions you're going to go through in life, where you'll feel sad, but you'll grow out of this and you'll have healthy relationships in the future. No, they got him on drugs real fast. And the drug they got him on, if you looked in the physician's desk reference, which we did, it shows not just homicidal tendencies and extreme violence, but also suicidal tendencies. He just didn't remember any of that. And he was in jail for a long period of time until experts came in and said, this had been an ideal student and classmate, and no one could figure out what had happened, why. So let us not say that this was a transgender-caused violence, because then you're playing into identity politics, you're playing into wokeism, and they've already done that. Did you notice, and don't take my word for it, go to all the major media and ask this question. Did anyone in the media name any of the 3 young children who were killed? No. No, they immediately went to the defense of the transgender. From President of the United States and thousands of other people were part of that woke phenomena. Well, that was very insensitive. You would have thought that Madonna was going out there to do a fundraiser for the transgender, but not for the three young children who were shot. What does that tell us, A, about Madonna, and B, about people who thought, yeah, let's defend transgenderism. Hey, you want to be a transgender? It's your right. It's your body. It's your freedom of choice. We'll have a different discussion when it comes to children, and we'll also have the discussion of what's actually happening when people are taking a lot of different hormones that have never been tested for the long-term effect. We'll also, tomorrow, play a clip about who may be behind the movement, dysphoria movement, to profit from it. They don't really care about you as a human being and what you're going through. And I've counseled people who've gone through this, and it's a legitimate concern. And we should deal with this humanistically, appropriately, but also understand that there's a difference between what a child should do, decisions they're capable of making, versus an adult. Think of all the people, including my own family members and my best friends, all got vaccinated. And they said, we're going to do it because, quite frankly, Gary, you know, the rest of this stuff is just conspiracy theory. And I said, okay, that's fine. I'm going to support you either way, as I always have, in whatever choices you make, because I'm your friend. I'm your family member. I'm not Elle McGantry. I'm not a proselytizer. I simply provide quality information, but I believe in the Buddha, detach. I put it on the table and walk away. If you choose to dismiss it, that's your business. If you choose to use it and find it benefits you, that's your business also. Every single person that I know of who got vaccinated had some form of side effects, and some people died. In fact, three people I know who are high-level, highly qualified, very respected in their field, well, two of them, deans of departments at universities, they risk their lives over jobs that they have already burned out on. There's nothing new they're going to add to that job, and they're financially secure enough that they could walk away at age 80 and 80. And yet they chose not to. I have a friend, 85, very smart. I mean, a brilliant guy. And one of America's leading intellectual liberals. He's done a lot in the old capital L liberal sense that many people still are versus the capital D Democrat liberal that is has nothing to do with the old liberalism at all. In any case, they all got sick. And some now have life-ending conditions. My responsibility as their friend is to go in there and see if I can help stop and interfere in the disease process due to the vaccinations. And yet, if you were to have a conversation with this person, would you ever do anything intentionally to hurt yourself? They would say no, true or not. And then why did you take the vaccine when the science was not there? And I explained to people, it takes normally 7 to 10 years to prove that something is safe. And shouldn't we honor the precautionary principle, first do no harm? They would say yes, but peer pressure. Okay, so your colleagues, your family members said, you got to get it, or you're one of those nut job conspiracy theorists, right-wing fascist, you know, racist. I mean, that's how they lump everyone, right? If you don't do exactly what someone else suggests, the official line, you're the worst people ever since the Nazis, and probably worse than the Nazis. People were slugged, beaten, arrested, handcuffed, pepper sprayed, tasered, all of which we've shown you, all before the science was even there to support the official version. Well, now, guess what? All the science you could imagine is there, abundant science, thousands of studies showing every single thing they gave us was wrong. They weren't right about a single thing. And now what's going to come is A, karma to those bastards, all of them, and B, maybe a little humility in those of you who denigrated, because we're not going to denigrate you. We're still going to be there to support you, in spite of the fact that it ended up you all made the wrong choice. You all made the wrong choice. And now they're lying about how many are dead. The latest study is 20 million dead. Yeah, 20 million worldwide. So, how's this happening? We're going to play a couple clips, but come back now to my original one. Because people are yelling and screaming and beating people up to make sure you understand they're intolerant of your freedom of speech and your beliefs and your views, doesn't mean that they're correct, either in theory or in action. To the contrary, they're acting worse than hooligans. And that's unfortunate because they will never hear what you have to say because they're not open to it. They're cult-like. I mean, the most rigid Jim Jones cult, the Davidian cult, that's what they are. So try pushing a rope up a hill. That's what it's like trying to present information. But they're the minority. The majority of people are reasonable. They want the truth. They just don't know where the truth resides. We're going to try to share it with you. So, Len and everyone else, what was the outcome from my trip right after Bowling for Combat? In fact, we were filming at the same time. His came out, and you saw him come out of the bank with a rifle over his head, and then there was a huge, banned guns. Okay, we came back with the people saying, Michael didn't tell our story. We said it wasn't the guns. That bank didn't even give guns. It was the drugs. Why don't you take a look at drugging of our children and see what Michael would later say? It was the drugs. But that was after I brought all this to his attention. Maybe he just didn't know this. Maybe he didn't ask the right people. But they all are really angry with Michael Moore. But he had his story. And then there's the other story. You have your own truths, and then you have universal truth. If I say I support women's rights, I can't say unless they're from Bangladesh being slave-driven. And if I say I support athletes to compete against their own and have a league for transgender, so you have transgender men, transgender women competing against their own, that's fair. But how's it fair when a 400-pound weightlifter competes against a 220-pound weightlifter and suddenly sets a world record and the same in swimming and the same and almost beats three women to death in mixed martial arts, a man competing as trans? Compete, yes. Compete against people that you're on equal footing with. To me, it's just more reasonable. And because when you set all these swimming records and you win every single race by a substantial margin, and all the other women who've spent so much of their life training, now you have established a goal that no one will be able to beat. Is that fair to the millions of young women who are competing? It's for you to decide. I merely raise the question. And by the way, here's a question, and a question that I would have had my friend, Barbara Seaman, who was one of the leaders of the second wave movement with Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and so many other outstanding people who got a lot of the laws passed and who made it very clear that, there shouldn't be inequality. Everyone should have the same opportunity, and one shouldn't denigrate the other. Where are the feminists today supporting women? If you say you're cis, and that's how they want, and you want to eliminate from all dictionaries, from all terminology, even to criminalize it, you can't say woman, you can't say man, you can't say brother, sister, mother and father. All those are to be eliminated because people don't want that. So now the only real woman is a trans woman, as one has said. So the question is, if you can't define a woman, I can. I'm sure many of you can. And if you say there is no such thing as a difference between male and female, which there is, and therefore they should compete together, all right, then you're creating a reality that suits your political and ideological needs, which you have every right to do in this country. We have these freedoms. You wouldn't have those in other countries, but we do here. The very country many people hate, give them freedoms to show that hate. in other places that people or the society wouldn't tolerate. You see, we're dealing with mixed metaphors. We're dealing with confusing messages. We can't separate out the identity politics, the wokeism, from normal reality, as perfect or imperfect as that may be. I'll be dealing with this on tomorrow's program in depth with one of the world's greatest scholars. We'll just be dealing with facts, no opinions. So let's not accuse anyone who commits a crime that they did it because of their sexual orientation. At the same time, how many people who own guns have never and would never use them to kill innocent children? If they didn't have a gun, I can show you evidence of how many times people will pick up a knife and stab someone. They'll always find a weapon, and the criminals always find weapons. Take away all the weapons of all the people who are peaceful, and you would have no one but criminals with guns. And look at the hell you would create at that moment. But these are just side points. I'm bringing someone on who is an MD, PhD, who has done the most meticulous research of every mass shooting in American history. And they all have one thing in common: the medications they were on that altered their perception of reality. Why is it we've never had a single program, not on 60 Minutes or anywhere else, discussing that? That deals then with politics. And that's unfortunate. We politicized and weaponized almost everything. Now, let's go to some issues here. And one of the issues that we're going to start with: did we get anyone who got the two quotes correct? Not yet? Okay, I'm still waiting for an answer on that. And 888-874-4888 is our number. Now, a couple things before we go to these short clips. And that is that I'm going to be coming back to New York on the 27th. In fact, the last day of the anti-aging clinical study and the health retreat, I'm flying directly up. And so I'm going to be in Kingston on the 27th as one of the keynote speakers on making America healthy again by taking back the right to make healthy choices. And an outstanding group of people are going to be there talking on this subject. More on that coming up. But the same day in Woodstock, at the theater, there'll be two showings, one at 3 o'clock and one at 6 o'clock. I'll be at both because it's only 15 minutes from Woodstock to Kingston. And after, I'm doing my talk at 2 o'clock. And one is just for the radio station as a fundraiser, 100% of the proceeds. Even though we paid for the theater, I'm giving all the money to the good people up there at the Woodstock radio station that plays our show and tries to do a good job. So that's for them, and then I'll be coming also up with other people. But don't call now. I don't have... I'm not going to discuss the movie. You'll only know about the movie when you're in the theater. I'll simply tell you this. This is the most hard-hitting, all-encompassing, original investigative reporting documentary I've ever done out of 101 documentaries. This is one of those, I'm not going to say anymore, all right? You'll see it when you see it. On Long Island, I'll try to get out there the same week to have a premiere at the Huntington Arts Cinema for you as well. Now, here are some shorts. It's 5 minutes long. And Rodney, along with our crew in our New York office, Dylan and Kyle and Sharon, we go over these to see, will this stimulate thought? It doesn't mean we agree with them or disagree with them. It means that, and I'm not sharing my points of view unless no one shares theirs. I'd like you to call in and share your points of view. But these are these little clips. Again, they're meant to stimulate thought, maybe on topics we don't have open, honest, and civil discussion on. I believe in inviting all types of ideas, and then you can have a chance to see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, who makes a reasonable presentation, who doesn't. So again, it's not whether you agree or disagree, because it might be you agree with one, disagree with another. It's just these are selected to stimulate discussion. Let's now go to these and then call in afterwards if you find that something being said stimulates you to respond. By the way, that person was speaking in front of the European Union. He was a member of the government's parliament in Ireland, and he is a colleague of Claire Daly. Claire Daly, in my opinion, is one of the most singularly important, courageous voices in the world. She is fearless. She's intelligent on every issue. She does her homework. And you can just see that she's going to go to the side of truth, even when it's against her own best interest on all levels, because people who tell that kind of truth generally are silenced. Any of that makes sense to you? Again, whether you agree or disagree, it wasn't selected because I agree or disagree with any of it. It's just I wanted you to have something different to hear. And especially important for me was the one about the man. The amount of money he earned was about, in his whole lifetime, was about $570-some. That's what he had when he retired. And then when he saw those kids working in the fields instead of being in school, he gave them that so they could go to school. But it wasn't enough, so he went back to riding at the age of, I think, 60, riding a pedicab. And there he is at 90, right up until he died, still riding that, giving all that money and downsizing his own life to one little room and just no new clothes, just so that a child can go to school. Imagine the legacy that you leave for all those children who may or may not know that your sacrifice was a opening for them to experience life at a level that they otherwise would not have experienced. And now take a look around. We have 17 million professionals that are high-income professionals, surgeons and professors. But then we have another 10 million professionals who don't make as much money but have a formal education, advanced education, and are very good at what they do. Then we have more than 14 million millionaires. So when you add all that up together, you would think that we wouldn't have any need to have a homeless child in the United States, but we have millions. That we wouldn't have to see 16 million children go to bed hungry each day, but they do. They're food insecure. So with all the hand-wringing at one time of the year, like Thanksgiving, seeing that a famous person has helped go in for an hour and serve some turkey, or Christmas, where we watch, you know, It's a Wonderful Life for the 1,000th time, but don't get its meaning. Why aren't these people beginning, while they still have their riches and their fame and resources, why don't they support charter schools? It's interesting how much money we will spend in universities today on that which provides no additional benefit to the student, but does create an environment that allows them to spend $84,000 a year, justify it, in tuition, not including room and board and food and books. That could easily go over $100,000. And then you see, okay, if I'm taught that if I go to that expensive school, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, University of Chicago, University of Pennsylvania, Brown, and Columbia, that somehow that will automatically mean I'm going to go ahead of everyone else that went to a state school because I'm going to get a better education. A, it's never been shown to be the case. B, you end up with debt. Now, if your parents are rich, they'll pay off your debt. So you have a big advantage. Then you can go to a restaurant on the Upper West Side that was serving beer, a quote, designer beer, at $50 a glass or a bottle, and a sandwich, Boar's Head a meat sandwich, for $65. I looked at the menu, and table after table, all young people, filled with bottles of beer. Well, who has, you know, $300 or $400 a night in cash and disposable income, and you're doing that all the time? The kid doesn't, the parent does. So what you have is you have a class-based society, one that prides itself in who they can support and who gets left behind. I'd just like to see everybody have a chance. And for those who have resources, give some of it to those who could use it. I think that would be very appreciative. But unfortunately, that's not happening. Okay, they give to foundations where they get a tax break, and more often than not, these NGOs, these foundations, with some exceptions, are not doing the work they should be doing, and the money doesn't end up where it would benefit people. It takes a humble person from the subcontinent to show us what we have forgotten. Just saying. I'm looking at the clock, and we're almost out of time. Tomorrow, we're going to have a strong commentary. I'm going to look at the whole world and all of our institutions, and I'm going to show you why I am not a fatalist, but I'm also asking you, take an honest look at where you're being protected and where you're not. Who's telling you the truth? Who is not? Who's politicizing you? Who is using your hubris or indifference or lack of knowledge to create laws that now can punish you if you don't adhere to them? And it's happening. I'll play a clip tomorrow. How many people in Russia last year were arrested and put in jail or brought to trial because they were using the internet? 500. Okay, that's a bad number. How many were arrested last year in Great Britain? 3,500, because their language was considered wrong. Therefore, the suppression of freedom of speech was heavy-handed in what it did. And it's also happening in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, France, and other countries. But it's also now happening in the United States. Oh, and by the way, over the weekend, someone I know, his daughter was a student at Albany, University of Albany, and they brought a speaker in to talk. And before the person could even say a word, they rioted against the person. They went on a rip and started burning the Bible in the university, tearing up the Bible, you know, throwing it in the air and burning it. Okay, if you don't want someone at the university, why don't you just stay away from that speech? And if you want to bring in your own speakers, do so. You have that right. You have that freedom. What if you had been burning the Quran? Do you think the newspapers would have covered it today as a hate crime? Yes. But for some reason, the Bible, whatever you may think of it, you're using your anger against what may be a speech you don't want to hear to, and it was, I think, a Christian speaker, to start burning Bibles at university. Wow. That's where we're at, people. And by the way, Dale, real quick, give us the answers to the quotes.
Yeah, my guess is George Orwell?
No. Dostoevsky. Oh. And the other was a former commissioner of the FDA. You heard me right. The commissioner of the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, said it was a criminal organization. Yep.
Wow.
All right. Thanks for your call, though. I appreciate it. Everyone, we're out of time. Stay tuned now for Utrecht's Lead. Have a nice day.